This meeting is being recorded.
Welcome to the CEN show, the voice of the world community. We added the world community because I'm about to start getting guests from around the world. I have one in particular, Mr. Niaga, who was a former teacher at Centennial High School. I used to teach with him. I'm calling him real soon. He'd probably be our first guest out of the country, which is he lives in Kenya now. So we're gonna tap into the world community here. All right, the CEN show and Conscious Corner are products of the website communityeducationnetwork.com. So let me show everybody the website because I want people to start going to the forum, and we need to have some good dialogue in this forum here. So let me show the website here. So here's the website. And we had on Monday, we had Shea Cotton on Conscious Corner. Tonight we have Ms. Meeks, Brianna Meeks. And let's go to the forum. I want to show everybody this forum. I didn't show it before, but I want to show everybody again. Here's the forum. And you can see we started off real good when we started the website. So it goes back a year. And there hasn't been any activity lately. So I want to encourage people on this panel right here to sign up. All you need is an email address. You sign up and put something in the forum where we can dialogue with each other and share some ideas other than this podcast. So it's easy to sign up. Like I said, you just need an email address. Okay, folks, let's move right along here. I am your host, Rasaki Maskani. Tonight's guest is Brianna Meeks. She's a teacher and a realtor. I met Brianna this fall of 2021. She did her student teaching in my class. And of course, she did an excellent job. So that's why I had to get her on here, because she's an exceptional person, in my opinion. Good evening, Ms. Meeks.
How Hello. Are you? We have two of us here. So you talking to me?
Yeah, and mom, Ms. Benita Meeks. Good evening to you, too.
Good evening.
So I'm pretty sure you can make a contribution here. So we're going to we'll get to you, but we're going to get to your daughter first. So, Ms. Meeks, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Okay, so I feel like that's such a hard question because it's like, you know, putting yourself on the spot. But I am, let's see, I grew up in Paramount, so just the city next door to Compton, California, and went to undergrad at Santa Barbara, got a degree in economics, and I always knew that I wanted to focus on something to do with financially helping myself as well as others. Just didn't necessarily know what, especially, you know, when you come out of college, a lot of kids are kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so I started off, actually, my first job was actually a recruiter. Ugh. Didn't necessarily like that. I did that for a few months, then moved to the fashion industry. And although I liked the creativity of it, I found that it wasn't something that was going to make any sense for me I felt that it was like not going to be long term, if that makes sense. Like, okay, this is cool, this is creative, but it's not helping others in a way that's going to financially make them better. It's actually hurting them in a way because they're buying clothes that aren't going to be do anything for them long term. So then I actually first got into real estate. So I became an agent, and I've been doing that for the past 4 years, going on 5 years this year. And then I also decided that I wanted to go into teaching. I actually have a lot of family who's into teaching on my father's side. And aren't there any teachers on your side, Mom? No, huh? We don't have any teachers on your side.
Just Linda, my sister-in-law.
Oh, okay, yes. There's a few teachers on my mom's side, but the overwhelming majority is on my father's side. Yeah, exactly. And I think the idea of being able to inspire others really fuels or motivates me, I should say. So that's kind of like a little, you know, big little backstory.
Okay, so I don't know if I heard why. Why did you choose real estate? What was the...
So I chose real estate. Well, the ultimate goal, when I sat down and I thought about, you know, after I left fashion, I said, okay, well, what do I really want to do? Because I really don't want to be ping-ponging in industries. And it really came down to financially bettering others. Remember, I was saying when I got into fashion, I realized as creative as it was and as fun, quote unquote, as it was, people were spending their money on things that were not financial investments, mm-hmm. right? They were buying clothes, they would wear them year or two, throw them away, or they'd get rid of them. At least 90% of stuff that they buy. Some things are investments, but most aren't. And so I was like, okay, so what can I change to go into what's going to actually financially help people or be some sort of an investment? And so ultimately, that's what it was as far as real estate, was me getting into the industry to help people. And and also a big factor was the fact that I bought my own place. I have to be honest. I bought my place at 23, turning 24, a little small old condo. My mom actually was the person who did all the paperwork. She's an underwriter. I just financially purchased it. And it kind of drove me into saying, okay, well, I know that if I could do this, that I could get others to do this as well. And, you know, I know I had my mom's help, but I was like, let me use what her knowledge, what I've gone through, to ultimately help people do the exact same thing.
Okay, so let's get into that then a little bit. Mm-hmm. What do you actually do as far as a real estate agent?
I help buyers and I help sellers. So I do both parts. So I help the overwhelming majority of what I do is buyers. So probably 70% of my transactions are buyers themselves. People who are, most of them, again, are first-time buyers. They are probably like 60% of that is first-time buyers. So people who have no idea what to do as far as the home buying process. And so that's ultimately what I do, is I look and I help people from the very, very, very beginning stages who say, okay, I want to buy a house. I have no idea what to do. So I tell them what to do, how they can get financing, what potential programs they can find to help them. If a program works, cool. If it doesn't, we get financing, we go look at homes, we get them in the contract, and then we get them some keys. So that's ultimately what I do.
Okay. So now, what does an underwriter do? Because mom is on here. Mom, you want to answer that? What does an underwriter do?
An underwriter assesses and evaluates your mortgage loan. We determine whether your credibility, your assets, your income is sufficient for whatever type of loan you're applying for. So when you apply for a mortgage loan, and you receive this letter that says, we need A, B, C, and D, or sorry, we can't approve you because of A or B or whatever the circumstance is, that's the underwriter. We do an analysis of income, credit, collateral, the three C's, yeah. Credit, income, collateral. I should know this. It'll come to me. It's funny, when you're doing something, it's second nature.
That's why.
Yeah, right. I'm glad I'm not at work. But what we do is when you provide all your documentation for a mortgage loan, because there's a lot of documentation, it's a little overwhelming. But in the beginning, of course, you have a salesperson, a loan person, and they tell you what's required for the loan type that you apply for, whether it's an FHA loan, a VA loan, a conventional loan, a jumbo loan. All of those categories require separate documentation, whether it be income or assets, depending on the loan type. So your documentation is submitted from the loan officer to the lender. Of course, it goes through a process. The processor reviews it. And from there, it goes to the underwriter. The underwriter evaluates and makes a decision based upon guidelines, based upon creditworthiness, things such as that. So we make the decision whether or not you are qualified for the loan, for the mortgage loan.
So basically, you're the yay or nay person.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, right. Yes.
All right, thanks for that. All right.
Oh, and so, can I put something out there? Brianna, you didn't say anything about your book.
Oh, no, because it's in the, I was going to mention it when I went to go get it. It's in the living room. Oh, you have it? Okay. Mom with the plug. She got it, of course. Yeah, so I have a book that, so basically to sum up, which, yeah, there it is. I basically took in, like, everyone was asking me a lot of questions, like, oh, you know, what can I do to get started? So I just threw it in this little, small little book that you could buy on Amazon. And that's basically what I did. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
You know, I can allow you to share the screen. And if you could pull that up for us, and I could put, put it on it. So while you're doing that, I could ask the next question. I know.
Okay, go ahead. I'm still here.
I know that you said, let me give you the ability to share the screen.
Yeah, hold on. Let me see.
Okay, I gave you the ability. So now you said you have a lot of educators on your father's side, right?
Yes, correct.
So what inspired you besides that, and it's sort of natural, what inspired you to get into education?
You know, it's funny because when I was, even a few years ago, if you had told me, oh, you're going to become a teacher, I would have said, you are not. Like, there is no way I'm not going to be bothered with kids. But of course, as you mature and you get older, you realize how much educating, especially our community, let's be honest, needs. You find that a lot of others have free game, and the free game comes from at home a lot of times, right? Like, you know, mom owns a business, then they're able to tell their kids about businesses, and they're able to tell them, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I find that a lot of us don't have that. We don't understand about investments. We don't understand about, I mean, just the basic things to be able to be successful in life. And so, of course, I don't know all the answers. I'm not sitting here like, oh, I'm the best thing ever. But I really decided to get into it because I felt that it was important that I not only am motivated by the inspiration of others, but inspire others to want more out of life and to be shown more out of life than just the small communities that they're from. Because, you know, a perfect example is Centennial. A lot of those kids don't even know much more than the few blocks radius in which they live, go to school, go to the grocery store and their aunt's house or so. And so I feel some sort of like calling to show those that want to be shown. Of course, you can, you know, like you said, lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. That there is a big, big world out there. And that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, so what I'm going to do, from what you just told us, I'm going to see if anybody have any questions or comments yet. I'm going to start with a historian, Joe Hembrick. Brother Joe.
I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Brother Mashinda.
No, not at this time.
Okay. Brother Doctor?
Can you show the book?
I can share my screen now?
Yeah, I gave you the ability to show it. Share it, yeah. Mom, while she's doing that, do you have any questions right for her? Oh, there it is.
Yeah, so this is pretty much it right here. You can see this is the cover, as a mom was showing right here. And then this is a few pages that give you kind of a little screenshot or whatever. This is the back cover. And that's pretty much it. And it's pretty much just a really truncated version of how to get started on buying a home. There's a few programs in there, actually, that you can find? Like, you know, like, I don't know if people have heard of the program NACA, or they've heard of the program that I use, actually. That program's in here as well. And yep, the WISH program. I forget the other program. There's one that's through the LA County. I think that might be the one I'm WISH, where it's up to $70. Basically, like a loan on the property or a lien. And that's pretty much what this book is about. And as you can see, I've got 3.9 star. I mean, that's not bad, you know? And that's just people who, I don't even know these people. So that's not like I'm out here faking reviews or anything. So,
That's excellent. You're an author too. Boy, tell you.
Sure, exactly.
If I could chime in on that, can I chime in on that?
Yes, go ahead.
The book also goes into the various forms of qualifications or lending assistant programs that we don't know about. A lot of us, you know, when I speak with people that are, you know, a lot of us are afraid. It's the unknown. Oh, I can't afford a house, or I can't afford property. I don't make enough money. Well, when Brianna bought this condo, she made $35,000 a year.
Yes. Right.
And I found a program for her that got her a $15,000 grant. And people need to be aware that grant is important, because grants you don't pay back. They're forgivable, but there are stipulations to them being forgiven. You know, you might have to owner occupy 10 years, or it might be until you refi or pay off.
Mine was 5 years.
Hers was 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I found her that program through a lender. We had done some searching, but a lot of lenders, I currently work for Union Bank, and they have a WISH program that a lot of people don't know about. Mm-hmm. And within certain parameters if you're in LA County, San Diego County, Orange County, and I think this
is Alameda, right?
Alameda, right. You receive $9,000 towards your closing cost and down. That's a grant. You don't have to pay it back. The other counties are $6,000. They're less. But this is something that I try to educate us on when it's brought up in conversation or something such as this, a panel, because we really don't know what's out there. We're a lot of us are, you know, it's the unknown. I have a girlfriend. It's a nurse. 30 years. Good money. Over 100,000, at least 100,000 a year now with her time in. Hasn't bought property. It's just afraid.
Fear.
But they're, you know, people who work for the city grants their employees money. There's a grant system for educators,
firefighters,
civil service workers. Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's so much money out there to give to people towards purchasing a home, but it's the unknown. So I try to get it out there as best as I can. And with Brianna, I assisted her and she put it in the book, and it's.
Yeah. I didn't even want to go to that program. I was young. Right.
She was hungover from the night before they had party.
I was like, oh, whatever, I'll just go next
do
time.
Do we have to go?
Right. Exactly.
He said, do we have to go?
No, they don't have this program for another 6 months. Like, oh,
right. Fine. And they only did the workshop for every so many months. And mm-hmm. I said, you know, come on, go. Let's just go. And it turned out to just work out in her favor.
And I also wanted to know, in that book, a lot of towards the end, it really kind of talks about how a big thing in our community, especially, but overall, people with fear, is a lot of people will get caught up on they can't afford what they want right now, right?
Right.
Okay, I want $1 million house, but I'm making $75,000 a year. Well, that's more than unlikely that you're not going to be able to afford that unless you got 400 grand in the bank, you know? So people get caught up on that. And so it talks about how my little one bedroom, 767 square foot condo, nothing fancy about it, no updates. I mean, it was from the 60s. It wasn't gross or nothing. It was just average, really average little place. Cute, but average. how it netted me a net worth of $150,000.
In 5 years.
In 5 years. A net worth, meaning that it was worth $150,000 more than what I paid for it or what I owed on it. And it's just, it's crazy that people don't even, you know, they get so caught up on oh, I need to have
houses,
five bedroom. Yeah. And ultimately that little small condo got us into this three bedroom, two bath, 1700 square foot house with a studio in the back now, you know? So just by starting off real small, that's how we were able to elevate. Okay, sorry, Ms. Abor.
I'm also a loan officer.
Yes, she is.
I have my NMLS and a notary, so I thought I'd throw that out there. I'm not as active with loans as I could be because I'm busy with underwriting, but
and you do real estate too. You have a real estate license too.
Right, and I do have my real estate license. So I'm just, you know, those are the fields of work that I'm in, and I can do that when I retire. You know, I'm sure you all know Evelyn Arnold.
Yeah.
Do you? You know Evelyn Arnold? Yes.
Yeah, well, they told me in my house.
Her okay.
Oh, died. Yes, I love Francis.
Jess Arnold. I'm mean, not yes. Jess Arnold, but
I love her.
But Francis.
Francis. I saw her at a real estate class, and she is the last one left of her family. Her husband's passed, her son passed, her daughter passed, and she is kicking strong. And she is such an inspiration. And she's the Arnolds had real estate when I was a kid in the 60s in Compton. Right, Amari?
I don't know how I bought this house. I know they gave me the keys. You know,
and you had a job.
I don't ask no questions. I've been in this house for 20 years, but it was Francis, and he turned it over to his mom, and his mom worked some magic, and I was in the house.
Yes. So yeah, it's just trying to help the community and help people understand the wealth of property. I mean, the importance of wealth. It's you see a lot of rappers now speaking of property wealth and investing in real estate, whereas before, you know, they were into the bling and the jewelry.
Yeah.
And you know,
they still are.
Yeah, they still are, but at least they're putting
moving on to
absolutely. And like Warren Buffett said, he said, "You buy real estate and you wait." Meaning you purchase it and you sit on it and allow it to make money. But it's your largest return in investment that you will ever get. You're not going to get, if you, like for instance, her property, she bought it in 5 years, she had over $100,000 in equity because of the location, because of the demand, you know, that type, all those are factors. And you really have to think further ahead than I can't get it, or that isn't what I want. Another thing I'm going to put out there is the Latino community is very, very, very savvy with putting their heads together and acquiring real estate. I have been seeing that since I've been underwriting since before Brianna was born.
A lot of us will not do that. Oh, I can't live with my auntie and I live with so-and-so.
Yes. They will put their coins together. I have never had a Latino on a loan that just, for instance, just say they didn't qualify. Their income is insufficient. Oh, well, if you can get a cosigner, they always come back with a cosigner. And a lot of times they apply for loans, multiples, two brothers may apply. You know, or two brothers and a dad may apply. And those things are ways to get in. You just want to get your foot in there.
Yeah.
And from, you know, like Warren Buffett said, get property, sit on it and wait, because it's going to return. Even if the market crashes, you know, I had a girlfriend, she was saying when the market hit in 2008, it was or whatever. Oh, I would just leave, you know, you're upside down. Everyone was upside down at that point. but we're right side up now.
With
quite a bit of equity now, most of us. So okay, you have to look at it that way.
All right, Mr. Barnes, I'm sorry.
What's thank that?
Okay.
I told you, Mr. Moore, I said, my mom is long-winded. Remember I told you, I said, she long-winded.
Ah, wrong. That's so bad. That's you okay. I'm just passionate about this. With
you are. This is true.
Yeah, that's all right.
Hey,
just raise your finger when you need me to be, when it's time up. Say, okay.
No, we're not going to disturb wisdom. Not at all. Okay, Professor Rock, question or comment?
In Jama, Sante San, I just want to say this is very, very beautiful to see the relationship between mother and daughter.
Oh, good.
You can feel the love that mm-hmm. they have for each other and the mutual interest in each other's welfare that they have. And that's a beautiful thing to hear and feel through a video and through a Zoom. I just have a couple questions and perspectives because, you know, just, I mean, LaFrancis was a tar babe also. He went to college.
Mm,
right.
Real estate is a tough game, even though, and I want to commend you on the book. The book is needed.
Yes.
And it should be a book that should be number one on Amazon for many young people who are not homeowners.
Yeah.
And even those that are interested in expanding their, turning their houses into assets as they have laid it out. That's absolutely a beautiful thing to try to develop a roadmap for young people interested in owning property.
Yeah.
Or buying property because, mm-hmm. you know, in this country, you really never own it because you still have to pay taxes on it.
Yeah, right.
After you pay the mortgage off. But the point is, it's a beautiful thing. Real estate are any of y'all a member of the Black Real Estate Association with Stan Jackson them?
No, I'm not part of that, but I'm part of CalBREAP, I believe it's called. And it's part of an organization that I helped start. And it's a bunch of Black realtors, and we're part of California Association of Realtors. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're talking about is like LA based, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
I spoke there a couple of times, Black History Month. And,
yes.
They were over there off of near, what is that? Behind the Crenshaw Mall, they had an office over there.
Yeah, they're in LA. I'm part of the one that we helped create, part of the first meeting in all of California. And so our goal is to, you know, you connect realtors among, like, not just LA, but, you know, San Diego and, you know, San Francisco and Alameda, Pasadena, you know, wherever, like that.
Okay, that's good. The reason I was asking, I'm just seeing if you were familiar with Stan. He went to Compton High also. And, you know, they're very active. They always have a program. The challenge is, you know, waiting on escrow to close is the thing. You know, anything can fall out of escrow.
The important part is to understand why it could fall out of escrow.
Yes.
Of course, you can't really do much about, because at any point from the point that you enter into a contract until the day it funds and closes, like closed, is the buyer could say, I don't want to buy it no more. And the seller could say, I don't want to sell no more for any reason.
Yeah. Well, if you're not a cash buyer,
yeah,
you know, for investment or something, you know, you really don't realize that your mother was saying, and probably pretty sure outlined in the book, all the paperwork and all the material you have to put together,
mm-hmm.
from your taxes
to, mm-hmm.
yes. you know,
yes.
and then the challenge of proof of down payment,
mm-hmm.
all of those type of things, where'd you get the money from for your
mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, I mean, even, you know,
all of that raised issues when people get in, they think, oh, I can just go buy a house, and just right. give well, you some money and, you know, give you the down payment, like they buying a car. But
right.
when it comes to property,
it's not the same. Right.
You know, you got to wait and do a title search and do yep. all those things
yep.
that make sure the property is clear, there's no liens, and
Yep.
I mean, it's not a thing that you can, unless you're an investor and just going to buy it as is or something with cash, you have to go through a lot in order to buy some property.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in other words, it's a good 2 to 3 months or longer process.
It doesn't have to be. It could be a 30-day. It depends on if you got your stuff together. Right.
You know, well, it doesn't have also, to be. Also, go ahead.
If I could chime in on what you were saying, loan officers, they need to let their people know up front also of what is required. And sometimes they aren't so certain. And I'm not saying that they can make or break it with that, but I tell loan officers and I tell people applying for loans, I told Brianna, the money you're using for your down payment, put it in one account and leave it alone. Because as an underwriter, we pull that apart. If you deposit, if you have $40,000 and you verify that lender sees, they bear, you say, I have $40,000 I'm putting down on this property. Well, they want 2 months bank statements. And the bank statements have to show consistency. So if 1 month you had $10,000 and then this month you have $40,000, as an underwriter, we pick that apart. And where's this $30,000 from? Then we look at large deposits. Any large deposit that exceeds 50% of your income is questionable. You will have to explain and or source.
And only $5,000 can be a gift, right?
Pardon me?
Only $5,000 can be a gift. Like if somebody wants
It can be more than that. Oh, you can gift the entire down practically.
Okay.
You have to put at least 3% of your own funds.
Got it.
But the issue is that houses, even though it's a good market right now, the houses are so high.
Yes, they are.
I mean, to qualify, it's going to take multiple people. Are you with an exceptional income in order to qualify? And my point is that, you know, many brothers and sisters, that book is very important to explain that. Mm-hmm. That, you know, how much of a down you have to come up with for a $500,000 home. Then the location, because you're buying a community, you're not just buying property, you know. That's why a house over here, although it's bigger and prettier, is less than a house in Beverly Hills. It's smaller and ugly.
Location.
So my point is that it's good that y'all are into this and that you're taking it upon yourself to try to educate people so that they won't get disheartened and stay prepared. Yes. This is why I think that it should be a part of the high school.
I agree. Middle school education.
We used to have realty classes, but most of them were at community colleges.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's where people went to get their training. But even to get your real estate, to become a real estate agent today, it has changed a lot than what it was 5-6 years ago, or even 10. And now, you know, you got to take that state exam to be a broker. I mean, it's not as y'all make it look so easy and simple because you've been in it, but it's not.
If it's something that's foreign to you and you're walking into, it can be quite challenging.
Overwhelming.
It can be quite challenging. There's a lot to learn, and you're never going to learn everything, but it's so broad. It's so huge.
And as you were saying, the number one asset that most people have is their house.
Yes.
Their property. Yes. I mean, that's the biggest asset, and that's
biggest asset.
That determines their wealth in many ways.
Yes, it does.
Their property. Now, my issue is, what about commercial property? Do any of you ever deal with buying commercial property?
I haven't gotten into it.
Vacant land, vacant property.
Vacant land is another thing that I've been looking into. So I haven't gotten into commercial yet, mostly because it's not really the market for it right now. It is, let me say this, it is to buy it, but you're going to potentially sit on it for a little bit, depending on where it is. But as far as
COVID, yeah,
because of COVID, right. I haven't gotten into that yet because you have to have like a separate like licensing or like certification really to be able to sell commercial. But as far as land, there's a site that I look at and it's called LandWatch. Have you heard of it? LandWatch.com. Yeah. And it shows, I'll put it in the chat, and it shows all pieces of land that are for sale in the United States pretty much. And I have it right here. You know, it's one of my tabs, always open, always thinking about the next investment, of course. And you have anything from, you know, a little piece of land in Nevada that's, well, I shouldn't say little, but a large piece of land in Nevada that's probably not as valuable because it's just desert, just a bunch of, you know, just nothing, to pieces of land in Hawaii, you know, lands, of course, that's in the millions, land that's in the hundreds, you know, the low thousands. So that's, as far as land, that's stuff that I look at too.
And the other issue is that trying to get the listing for property is very difficult for Black realtors.
To get the list to be the one that lists
the property for sale.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you have to, because I've done a few listings now, and each of them have been the relationship. Like, I've known them, we grew up together, we were friends. They bought a house and then they, you know, wanted to sell it, or they bought a house through me and then wanted to sell it a few years later, like that. And yes, that is definitely a little bit more difficult getting into, for sure. It's
because as a realtor, you can sell the property, but you have to share it with the person. Points with the person that has the listing. Is that correct?
What do you mean?
Like when you
mean
the listing and the selling agent.
Go ahead.
That's the cost. He means the cost between the listing and the selling agent. That's what you mean.
Is that what you mean?
In other words, if I'm an agent and I try to sell some property that someone else have listed, I don't get all those points for selling it. I have to share it with the person I have to listen.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. So like, as a selling agent, you determine what the person who's buying it agent is going to get. So how it works is you negotiate with the seller. You say, okay, we're going to either do 5 or 6%. Sometimes they want to do as low as 4. 4 is like, you know, most people are not going to be bothered, but okay, 5 and 6 is standard. So let's say it's 6%, right? As a selling agent, you then determine what the buying agent is going to get before they even put it on the market. So I say, okay, well, I want 4% and I'm going to give the buying agent 2% because I've done all this work. Or I'm going to take 3.5% and I'm going to give them 2.5%, whatever. But it's predetermined and the seller knows, and it's all in the contract that I'm going to do 6%. But then I'm going to be giving, you know, the buyer's agent 2% or 2.5% or 3%, whatever you decide to do. So you share it, but it's just kind of, it's expected.
It's a split cost, is what it is.
That's my last point. Sometimes the people that list the property want more than a buyer to buy some property that you listed. Mm-hmm. And you say, I only want to give you 2 points or 3 points. You say, no, I want 3. You can't buy it. Is that correct?
No. It's determined before the property hits the market.
Right.
If they're doing stuff like that, that's some really shady stuff and you really shouldn't be bothered with it, to be honest. That's it's all in the contract. Like, it's a legally
binding. Because it's listed when they list the home.
Yes, correct.
When the home is listed, the listing agent puts on there what they're willing to pay the buying agent percentage-wise.
Not willing to pay what's been negotiated.
Those are the
terms. Yeah. This is what you're going to get.
These are the terms. So if you don't want to do 1.5% as a buying agent, you say, they're only paying 1.5%.
Have some buyers who are like, I've had buyers who are like really interested in properties at like 1 and 1.5%. do I want to be bothered with it? No. Did we open escrow? No, thank God. You know, I'd be bothered with it because it was so, it's like pennies there. But, you know, you sometimes it's just what your buyer wants. Are you but the problem with that is a lot of buyer's agents aren't going to be bothered with it. So now you, so but if you have 3% buyer's commission, all these agents are like, come on, let's buy this house. There's more motivation there, if that makes sense.
But now, once you become an agent, mm-hmm. can you sell a house or sell a house in any area, or are you designated as far as, because a lot of black realtors say they can't get in the Beverly Hills market.
They can't get into the Woodland Hills market.
They can't get in the Palos Verdes market. You understand? They can sell houses in the community, but when they try to go and get some of them big sales, the $1 million sales, a lot of people starting out in realty, unless they have
it's not that they can't get into it. It's right. Just that it's really competitive. It's like, okay, for instance, Mr. Moore played basketball, right? He went to Cal State, Long Beach, Mr. Moore, he played basketball. But then if you go to the NBA, that's the big league. That's like people at Cal State, Long Beach, right. Like, I can't get a break, you know, on the Wizards or the Lakers. Yeah. What it is it's like, that's the big leagues. Like only like, it's like a funnel, right? Like at the bottom, there's all these agents who could sell houses in Southgate and Compton and, you know, Paramount and Lakewood and Long Beach right here. And then you start going to the top, and then it's like, up here is like Beverly Hills, Culver City, Century City, you know, like places that are like
Pasadena.
Pasadena, right.
Like, Calabasas, right.
If you have a friend who happens to be in the income that you can sell, you could sell anywhere in the state of California, anywhere. I could sell, if my cousin says tomorrow she wants to buy a house in San Francisco, I could fly there tomorrow and sell her a house in the whole state. But it's just some markets, some, like, I'll give you a prime example. I had a friend ask me yesterday for a recommendation for an agent in Pasadena. And I'm like, but I am an agent. And she is looking for somebody who is selling specifically in Pasadena. But the point is if she had asked me to be her agent, I could sell her a home in Pasadena. So I could have broken into that market selling into Pasadena. Does that make sense? But a lot of people in the Pasadena area are not going to use somebody who is
right outside of the market area. Correct. And that's what it is. You can see that on these shows. Yeah.
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 A lot of nepotism. Yeah.
Because if you know someone who wants to buy a home in Beverly Hills and you know them, then you can be their representative, their representative agent. And that's where it all lies in, or Palos Verdes, or, you know, wherever the location is. It's not that you can't. We're licensed anywhere in the state of California.
Yeah.
It's just getting into the areas, you know, just.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good dialogue there. So we're going to move to another question here. Okay, so you're African American and you're in your early 30s, as far as I know.
Yes.
How do you view the condition of your peers of African descent?
Ooh, you know what? I'll say this. From those who I went to school with, I find that a lot of them are still trying to find their way. And what I mean is they don't necessarily have a career, at least what they would consider a career. I don't want to knock anybody's hustle or what they're doing, but they're doing jobs that are for the right now, if that makes sense. Okay, I'm just working somewhere. This is not something that I'm going to see myself in 10 years. This is just a job, if that makes sense. A lot of them are starting out in some sort of business, doing either the candle businesses, massage, therapists, or whatever it may be. But I find a lot of them from the public school system that I went to are still trying to find the way. Like, I mean, like 90%, in all honesty, from what I see, from my group. On the flip side, my husband, Brian, went to a private school. And all the overwhelming majority of his friends are doing big things. He's got one who's got a show on TV1. He's got one friend who is a top engineer at Turner, which built basically every building you see. They built a SoFi Stadium. He's got one friend who is engineer, top accountant, you know, was being flown all over the world, Paris, and do all their, of their accounting for all the, their businesses. So I find that, you know, but they grew up in the Ladera, the View Park, the, you know, the Black, quote unquote, Beverly Hills, the upper echelon of our community. But a lot of his friends are, if, you know, as you say, career, they got something, they've set with it, and that they're on the up and up. You know, he's got one friend who's a community outreach director for the Rams. I mean, like, that's his favorite team, and he's a community outreach director for the Rams and the SoFi Stadium. So I find that in my community, my, you know, from the public school system, however you want to view it, maybe it's the socioeconomics of maybe what we went to school with versus what Brian went to school with, they're finding their way. Do I think they'll find it? Maybe. I'm not quite sure. Versus, you know, all of Brian's friends married, you know, one kid is starting a family, trying to start a family, whatever it may be. So, yeah, it's just almost like two sides of the track, really, to answer your question. As far as my community, they're still finding their way.
Well, I'm taking that as it's a maturity thing.
Maybe
they haven't mature, and it's due to a lot of dynamics that occur in our society. So,
you know, I don't know if it's a maturity thing or if it's that they already had a upper leg in a lot of cases. Does that make sense?
No, like, I'm just saying in general, I'm saying that a lot of people may be, you know, not knowing what they want to do yet as far as career-wise because of the lack of. And then also, you know, it's easy to from my experience in teaching, it's easy to join the in crowd of non-achievement versus, you know, linking up with the kids that are want to do something. It's a majority of the kids want to be in the negativity
or versus the pool. The positive.
Yeah. So it's a challenge.
The cool kids, we probably eat no matter what generation we in. All the cool kids, is a lot of them really didn't do nothing from high school. I mean,
yeah. No, it's true.
Not all of them. There's definitely cool kids who turn out to do some really great things, but a lot of them is still trying to find their way or still trying to hang on. Like, they peaked in high school, you know. So.
Well, yeah, and you find that going back to reunions, and you see those that were just not nobodies, but just little simpletons. And here they are, doctors and lawyers and, you know, they, you know, very established individuals. And it's like, wow, you know, it's a wow factor. But, and then you have those that were most likely to succeed, and the successors, and the this, and the jocks, and the, you know, the pop, because it's a popularity thing when you're young. Yeah. It's very about popularity, and they end up being, you know, I don't even think I'll say, but you know, we all know, we've all seen a few of them.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. All right. So, another thing I know about you and what you've told me is you travel often.
Yes.
Is there a particular place you would like to revisit, and why?
Ooh, you know what? I think about revisiting that's a hard one, actually, because there's so many places that I liked.
Well, just give me a couple.
Okay, I'll give you top two.
Yeah.
Top two. One place is Costa Rica, and that's mostly for the lifestyle. They have a thing called a Blue Zone. I don't know if you have you heard of the term Blue Zone before?
No.
So Blue Zone is an area of the world. I think there's 4 or 7, something like that. What's the place, the city called, Mom? And not far from here. You know what I'm talking about? Loma Linda?
Oh, Loma Linda, yeah.
Loma Linda is one. There's a city in Costa Rica, that's another, and there's 2 others. I can't think of it.
The healthiest people in the world.
Correct. You're on average, they expect it to live longer because the stress is less and they just naturally eat a little bit
and
better.
And their diets, yes.
And their diets better, exactly. So Costa Rica would be one because of the lifestyle and the low stress. And, you know, you're there to live and not working to go make money, not caught up in consumerism. And the other place would actually be Kenya. And it will probably be to do it right. Because we did a safari, but we didn't necessarily do like the, you know, one where you camping and you know, seeing all the big old animals and stuff. But what I really liked about it was you look like everybody else. Like countries like that, I truly appreciate. Jamaica, even the Dominican, you know, I mean, as far as the skin tone, you know, a lot of, Brian and I, we just fit right in. Like, nobody's going to look at us sideways when we're there. Yeah. Not the minority, you're the majority. And so places that are, like, heavily melanated, I truly... I feel a sense of like, oh wow, okay, like I don't have to, I don't stick out here for other reasons. I'm just here. I'm just there. You know what I mean? So though Costa Rica and Kenya, but probably Maasai Mara this time instead of Nairobi.
Okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Costa Rica, all right. Okay, now this is the last question, and then I'm gonna go back to the panel for questions and comments.
Okay. Okay.
What is your view of Black people in general in the United States?
Lost.
Ooh. go into a little detail, please.
I think we have, you know, a lot of us have the foundation, right? We've got the, you know, even in mom, your generation, if you guys, you saw people, carpenters and woodworkers and building things and had businesses and they, you know, community. If you didn't have any sugar or you didn't have, you just went next door and asked your neighbor. It was like this, you know, it was like this sense of like communal, like kind of what other cultures have now that we've just lost our way completely.
We have lost that.
And a lot of us have gotten this idea that, you know, because the TV has told us we can't trust us, we don't trust one another now. And then when we make it, you know, we go and we do some success, we buy properties, we do this, we move to an area that doesn't look like us. And then we mad that like it didn't work out in our favor, or we're mad that
That they treated my kid a certain way.
Yeah, my kid a certain way, or my kids
that you only have them
wrapped up in the head and doesn't understand why they have, you know, nappy hair and it's not straight and it's not long down their back, you know? And it's like it all kind of, you know, messed up in the head. So I personally feel that, of course, that we're the original people, but that we are like a king that has been locked up and brainwashed, if that makes sense. And we just have like lost it. Do I think it's going to come back eventually? Absolutely. But Mr. Moore, I know you want to go to Egypt, but Egypt is, I mean, man, like, it's, in a way, it's life-changing. You're like, wow. As much as they try to label Egyptians as white people now, and that is what the census has, Egyptians are labeled as white people now, you really do see that they were far, far beyond their years. Like, filtration systems that could take water from the Nile and bring it up and make all the water and, you know, cultivate the plants. I mean, just things that are like, they still can't figure out how they made those pyramids to this day.
They still can't. It's absolutely exactly.
And
they don't.
As small as those each individual bricks look, each one goes to about my rib cage. It's huge. Okay. So the point of me saying that is that as a community, we are lost. I mean, I think it's a shift coming, but I think what happens is as soon as the shift happens, you get the war on drugs, right? Magically, the drugs in our community dropped off and we all jacked up like in the 90s and the 80s, you know? So I'm hoping there's no war on drugs coming anytime soon, but I feel that it's anytime we try to do better for ourselves, I find, I think something magically comes out of nowhere and we're all of a sudden the villain again. And I also want to note that I think that we are the original people of the United States. And that's the last thing I'm going to say.
Okay. Well, we got a historian on here. We got two historians, and then we have, we got a lot of historians on here. So now tell me this. This is the last thing. What contribution can you make to get us back to that point where we were, where we had this community that was together and we able to share and barter? And what can you do personally?
I'm doing it right now, or I'm trying to do it. Trying to get, because I think to me, although we say it's not all about money, it's all about money, at least in the United States. Okay, other countries, it may not be, but it's all about money here. Let's just be honest. If you can get out of murder, you can, you know, buy the whole half of the country. You know, it's all about, it all rolls back to money here.
You can be president.
You can be president, exactly. Yeah. I think if we had more financial strength, we would not be in the situation we are right now. And if we also had a sense of community, maybe a sense of community, right, where we stuck together and, like, if something happened, it was like, okay, we're not going to deal with this company no more. We would have a lot more power. But a lot of us is like, oh, you know, whatever they did, that I don't care, I'm still going to shop there. Okay, well, that's not how we're going to get anywhere. So anyway, so I think having more financial strength and more financial backing, and two, I think educating those who are willing to take it in. Of course, like I said, there's going to be those people who don't want to hear it, they don't care. Okay? But if I had those 5 students a year who I can be like an inspiration and change their thinking about how and who they can be in life, that's the win in my book.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me go to the panel now. Brother Hembrick, questions, comments? Brother, okay, there he is.
I'm on the phone with my daughter, but you know, I'm in the real estate game, not as an employee, but investor, I guess you should say. Been in it quite a while. I know Miss Arnold, who was the first Black realtor in the city of Compton. I bought my first house through Francis, which was one of those special first-time buyer programs, and Miss Arnold found a loan for me. I went by there and hollered at her since his passing. He's still working strong.
Yeah.
And I'm a teacher. I retired from Centennial. Well, not Centennial, but Compton Unified, but I worked at Centennial like 20 years. And I used to teach property ownership to my students all the time.
Okay.
If you don't buy no property, you ain't even in the game in America.
Nope, at all.
That's right.
And, you know, we went out and cleared a field one time. It was full of weeds, and this other teacher was trying to get a whole culture class on campus. So we cleared all these weeds. I must have had 6 pile of weeds, you know, about 6 feet high. So I was telling the kids about, you know, keeping your property up. And this is the reason why a lot of people don't really get near us, because, you know, because we let it run down. And when you let it run down, that's tens of thousands of dollars that's coming out your pocket. I said, you might as well let somebody just walk up on you and rob you for $20,000 if you allow that stuff to persist in your community. But anyway, moving right along. I don't know if you know Ron Cooper, R.S. Cooper and Associates. Anyway, he's a longtime broker and whatnot, friend of mine. Was the president of the Black Realtor Association for a few years. They also go over there on soccer. He's kind of semi-retired now. I think his daughter's in it now. But property is the way to go. I have several myself. I know my first one I bought was for $61,000 back in 1985.
Wow.
And I have 2 other income properties, and the house that I live in, I bought it for like 6 something. I was worth about $1 million. So I know the game. I kind of held on, you know, to those properties because my daughter wanted to be a doctor. And she went to private schools, but she's from Compton. But
A private school, I'm telling you, something about it.
She went to school with all the little Jews out there in Long Beach, so I was coming up on the game from Jump Street. And the thing I'll say, but the difference in these schools is exposure.
Yes.
Those kids are exposed to so many different things.
Exactly.
And the kids in Compton can't even go on a field trip.
Exactly. They don't know better. Exactly. Lost.
I had talked to many of them, and they had never been to Playdell Ray Beach, which is right down the street.
Right.
They're kind of victims of the neighborhood, kind of prisoners, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, don't want to go and scared to go.
Mm-hmm.
I was a coach also. You know, black colleges taking brothers, you know, left and right if they can find some. And I had a bunch of them who got hooked up, but they were scared to leave the community. Wouldn't go.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Basketball player went to some little school down in Alabama, didn't stay a semester, came right back. Just, you know, what's this program called? Posse. I like those kind of programs so kids can go to college together and they can lean on each other to make sure they get through and that sort of thing. But anyway, I commend what you're doing. I like the little book. And I got a question.
Thank you.
I got a question. When you going to become a broker?
You know what? I actually was going to do that. You know, I just finished grad school in December, like just finished. So it kind of like I held that off because it was just a little bit too much to do all that, try to sell real estate, be in grad school, do student teaching. It was just, I would have no hair. So I'm actually going to set that goal for this year. I was just thinking about that. I'm going to set that goal for this year that, you know, I always believe in, you know, once you accomplish one goal, what's the next one? Like all consistently creating new goals. So that's the one for this year. 2022 is going to be my year to become a broker. And then next year you'll see my name in the back right here. Say, bring me realty.
Okay. Do you work independently now? Or?
Yeah. I work for the real estate group in Torrance. Cause you know, when you're an agent, you can't be by yourself. But I will be independent once I become my own broker, yes. So next year, sometime, I guess. I'll become a broker this year and then set up the paperwork for next year.
Excellent. All right, brother. My son, about through with the questions. I heard something about history. I was on the phone with my daughter, and I didn't quite catch what the historical aspect was. Oh, about us being the first people in this country? Was that it?
Yes, I believe that. I don't care what anybody tells me.
Could you say that again?
I said, I believe it wholeheartedly. I don't care what anybody says. I feel like we were here, and I feel like the, you know, others are really trying to make it to where we don't understand that. That they try to bring, you know, whitewash history or, you know, always get rid of certain things. I feel like we were already here. A lot of people were already here.
There's a couple of books you can check out. One is They Came Before Columbus about the Olmecs, you know. Mm-hmm. Those Olmecs they found down in Veracruz, Mexico, that are on display in the Natural History Museum in New York City. They're like 8-9 feet tall and carved out of black stone. And it's another book written by a European, believe it or not. It's called America BC. And he was a professor at Harvard or Yale somewhere, and they fired him for writing a book.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And that's what I think that's what happens whenever the kind of truth comes out. It's like, oh, you know, we got to shuffle.
You know, Dr. Ben was fired like 47 times from various universities.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yes, we, not just United States, we're the first people everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere on this planet.
I know. I think, you know, others are actually us and, you know, they've lost, you know, the melanin because you can't have that when it's cold.
Right.
And whatever, you know, I think we were also, you know, we also naturally have straight hair, some of us, just like a lot of us have blue eyes, right? And then they just have made it as though, like, only certain class of people have it, but I don't think that that's true either. I think that we all have those features. It's just...
It's kind of dependent on the region you grew up in.
Yeah.
It's called acquired characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Twa people, the Hutu, the Kalahari, or the Bushmen, and the Europeans put a negative spin on them, calling them pygmies. Those ancestors were everywhere first. And still, and actually, they're still in those places today, but they're usually living high up in the mountains and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, the hair and eye thing, like I have some pictures of some original Aborigines and Tasmanian people, and they have straight blonde hair, straight red hair. But that's kind of, you know, not the norm. But what happened was when we ventured up into Europe and got hung up in those ice ages, you know, we had to adjust to the environment. And then straighter nose got longer and all that.
Right.
And Brother Martin wrote a book called Evolution of the Caucasoid that deals with that to a degree. And then another guy, Michael Bradley, who wrote The Iceman's Hair. So you are correct in what you're saying. And I guess I'll talk long enough. It's not my show, it's your show. So let me pass it. All right.
All right. Thanks for that, Brother Hembrick. Brother Mashenda. Brother Mashenda, he could have stepped away. Brother Doctor?
No, good information. You know, I have my real estate license too. I was a real estate agent back in the mid-90s. Yeah, so you just bring some bad memories, you know. You know, somewhere, yeah, Rod was sad. You know, if you didn't know someone, you wouldn't sell them the house.
Yep.
Because whites would not come to me. Blacks couldn't afford it.
Yep.
So I had this real estate license. I was working with Caldwell Banker. Started out with this Paradigm Property. Then went to Caldwell Bank, and I should have went with this guy who tried to get me to sell all this vacant land in California City before they blew it up. He had this vision. I should have went with him. But I ended up hooking up with another brother who had a license, and he took a bunch of us blacks out to Arizona in the mid-90s when you get the HUD homes for $500. That's all he was down. That's all you needed. And I invested a lot in Arizona. But yeah, it was tough. It was tough. Only time I got blacks or whites coming to me is when everybody else rejected them. They want me to come do something illegal, you know, with the paperwork.
Yeah.
You know, right. And another thing I couldn't do was I was just too honest. You know, you have that real estate thing where I learned, you know, my broker was telling me, hey, it's the three house rule. You take them to one bad house that's tore up that you want your dog living in, then you take to another one that's just okay. Then you take them to the one you want to dump. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't be that dirty.
There's a lot of shady people in there.
A lot of shady. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do all the little shady things in real estate. Yeah. So I just let my license lapse. I just couldn't do it. I was more better with just doing investors, you know, just putting up the money.
Yeah.
And but yeah, I feel you doing it. Happy for you. Get your broker license. Get you some agents. Train them right, get them out there doing it. Like I said, back then, that's when the military base was closing down in the 90s and everything with the HUD and the VA.
Right, right.
You know, I remember that. I got my license right before things started crashing.
Yeah.
You know, and I was so frustrated. I mean, I went through all the schools. The test was easy, passed on the first. I was the first one to finish. Got up, turned my stuff in, and, you know, but I'll never go back doing that in real estate. You know, as an agent.
There are laws now, a lot of different laws.
Oh, yeah. I got so frustrated, I left it alone. I just came doing more than investors.
Really?
But, yeah, I was just so sad about our people. You know, you come to me after everybody's telling you, no, you want me to do something illegal. You know, but I'm glad you guys are doing it. And hopefully see that when you come back on, you have your broker's license.
Oh, I will.
Hopefully motivate me to go back and get my license.
Yeah.
Come work for you.
That'll be good. That'll be good. That's why we're doing this, to make those connections.
Yeah.
Okay. Miss Benita Meeks, question, comments for your daughter?
No, I guess the questions, comments that I have, I kind of already know. I'm just thinking, I'm just very proud of her. She's been a very motivating and inspiring to me, because I've been in the mortgage industry since the 80s. And I would always speak of occasionally, oh, I need to get my real estate license. Oh, I'm going to get my real estate license. And, you know, I never would. I'd never pursue it. And so I was off and she was off at one time and she was signing up for it. And she said, Mom, come on. You know, just come on. You have the time now. We need to do this. You should have had your license. And she was right. I should have had my license. You know, and I have it. I'm not very active with my license as I should be, but it's there. And when I retire, it's there. I can do this.
She's gonna come work for me realty, and we're gonna get her at and we'll get her freeze.
You know, and I can do loans, and she can do the real estate. You know, or we can do, you know, both. I don't think you can't do both. You can't have your NMLS number and your real estate on the same deal. I don't think.
Yes, you now.
Okay. Yeah, Crystal did. Yeah. So I mean, that's double money.
Yeah, it is.
That's quite, because you make a pretty penny on those loans too. You get about
2%.
Max is 3 now. They cap that too, because now, the society's changed. It's changed a lot in the lending industry after that big meltdown. So there's not as much fraud as it used to be. People speak of fraud, but it's not as prevalent because everything tracks back to the individual. You are liable and responsible for what you do. So if you do a shady loan, it has your number and your name on it. And
they come for you.
Yeah, they come back to you. So that's the way things are. But I'm very proud of her. She's very motivating. She always did go after what she wanted. Always. The way she is now, she was that way as a young girl. She was that way as a little something. You know, when she tried out for cheerleading.
Lord, we're going back.
I'm doing the cheerleading story. Well, she was in Pop Warner. We did Pop Warner. And then she was going into high school. So the first year in high school at Lakewood, you couldn't cheer, you know, your freshman year. They want you to get acclimated. So I dropped her off at a football game one night. And she said, and then when I picked her up, she said, Mom, I'm going to be a cheerleader. I said, really? She said, oh, yeah, I just love this about it. And she's giving me all these things that she was really inspired with and what she wanted to do. She tried out. She was cheerleading. And she had to try out every year.
You did.
And she was a cheerleader every year. And the things that she wanted, like, you know, she came back home. She told me when she left college, you know, she said, I just want to come home. She says, I have friends who want to get apartments and share and, you know, share rent. She says, I just want to come home. I just want to buy me something. Well, the market had crashed. What was happening is there were properties, but people didn't have the money. You know, it's always one or the other. So she took her time and she kept searching and checking, and she would check the market. And she told me she was ready. I was like, really? She said, yeah, I want to
get. I said, she one did. Paycheck a month and living at home.
Mm-hmm. She said one paycheck a month living at home, because she's living at home. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't charge her rent. She just had to, you know, pay some little minor things around, you know. So it worked for her, and she used it to her advantage. And she, you know, we got together, and she got she got a little condo, and it worked. You know, I found her a program, 3% down, no MI.
What's
and
MI?
That's unusual. MI is mortgage insurance. And that's added to any loan that is when they finance over 80%.
Anything under 20%, people don't know that.
Right. If you put less than 20% down, there's mortgage insurance added.
So a monthly additional cost.
So the less you put down, like if you put 2 or 3% down, you know, you're going to pay a higher premium. The premium's higher. And you pay it monthly. It's added into your mortgage, to your PITI, and it's removed when your property establishes the equity to put you back at 80% loan to value, meaning you have 80% equity. That's what that means, actually. You know, so it comes off. It can come off. There used to be a cap on years, how long you had to have it. I don't think there's, I know it's at least 2 years now, because properties are escalating, but in value more rapidly.
but the MI comes off. And once that comes off, you can refinance it or contact your lender and say, you know, remove this MI, the mortgage insurance. And they do some assessment on properties and determine that you have sufficient value for them to remove it. But she got no MI and no points. I mean, it was a beautiful, it was a sweet deal. I haven't seen anything else like it, you know, and 15.
Still out there. That program is still available and it's in the book too.
Yes. I tell them about it. I tell anyone about it looking for home, first time buyer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's been my inspiration.
Well, that's excellent. You're basically looking at yourself right there. That's excellent. And you know, I want to take a little stock in her because she was with me for about 4 months.
Yep.
And she really enjoyed it. It seems like she appeared to really enjoy it.
So she's a part of my daughter crew.
Oh, great. Four has only daughters. He has like, what, four girls this morning?
I got five daughters.
Five.
So
really?
Yep. So ooh. she makes six. She's one of them too.
Five girls. Yeah.
I'm honored.
Yeah. So we're going to end with Professor Rye. Professor Rye, question, comments?
Again, appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. I want to really say Asante Sana to everyone that's participated tonight. It's a very good session. You know, it's not that Black people are lost. Most people in America are lost.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, I'll give you that.
And a lot of it is
very true.
I think Carter G. Woodson said it in the 30s, the miseducation.
Yes. Yeah.
And the culture crisis, Dr. Rager argued.
Yes.
And that happened with becoming Americanized.
Mm-hmm.
They want people to be ignorant because that's how they make money off
them. And it's how you control them as well and tell them what to do.
And all of that. So it's not that because we Black and we disunified, these people just tore up their capital.
That's true. This is true.
You know, they fought a civil war. You know?
This is
so,
true.
We just have to, some of us are not as fortunate to have such a brilliant mother like you.
This is true.
And to come up in our community and then come up with an economic and business focus.
Yeah.
Both of y'all should be commended because you can have a good mom and they can work hard with their kids, but the kids can still turn out not the way you want them. And so y'all are a beautiful couple as far as
thank you.
Representing what hard work would do. We're in a challenging time because, you know, a lot of people bought property and lost property for it. You know, you get in over your head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, like you said, one thing to buy, how you keep it, as Brother Joe was Hembrick was saying about maintenance of your property.
Yes.
Then having a vision of flipping it and or either refinancing to go into other property or building on land when you buy the property. You know, so it's a lot to real estate, and that's my point. And that book. I'm just hoping that, you know, it would be shared and that it'd be an inspiration for other young people. And I'm hopeful that you and your mom will continue y'all work in what school district do you work for?
I am technically a substitute teacher right now at Long Beach Unified and Compton Unified. So I work for both.
Okay, so you teach in the communities then?
Yeah, so I will have some sort of position in August. That's the goal. So
okay, that's a good thing because one of the greatest. Well, you're a teacher. You know, you're teaching people about real estate in your book. Uh-huh. You know, so that's it. That's the greatest role in life, teaching.
Uh-huh.
And so I just want y'all to keep up your work. And hopefully that you can come back on the program whenever you have some new information or some information you think we can share with our listeners and followers of the Conscious Corner or the Community Education Network. We also want y'all to become a part of it. This Monday, we're going to be honoring Dr. Martin Luther King.
Okay.
You know, his birthday is Saturday, but it's going to celebrate it Monday. We're going to celebrate it Monday, and we're going to be discussing his legacy and allowing people to make comments, because without the struggle of Black people, Black realtors wouldn't be successful or have the opportunity they have now.
Right. Yeah.
Somebody paid the price. That's why they started the Black Realtor Association, because of racial discrimination in real estate.
Right.
And they broke down barriers.
Right.
And paved the way. And even working in banks, and other than a cashier and moving up to a loan officer and a loan preparer and things of this nature, all of that came in struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're going to be talking about that and the contributions of the civil rights movement and the uniqueness of Martin Luther King's vision for us. To move forward, and hopefully y'all will join us Monday at 6:00. Okay. And if you have any comments, information you would like to share, you said a lot about Black history, and there's a lot more to it, as Brother Hendrick was saying.
Right.
How did the people who built the pyramids end up in projects? You know, it's not example, the disproportionate amount of Black people that, you know, can't find loans even though they qualify, and they still get turned down.
Mm-hmm.
In many situations, and your mom, I'm pretty sure, can attest that it's a struggle, you know, but it's just a beautiful thing to have people like y'all in this industry with the integrity and the intent of really showing people how to find a good deal and how to get into economic development by purchasing property and purchasing a home.
Because
you don't have to worry about people inspecting it. You don't have to worry about getting people
the rent
every month. You don't have to do about all that. And it's a sense of stability.
Yes, it is.
For your children
to
be. They know that house is going to be there when they come. And they ain't got to start moving and packing up and moving.
And as a parent, you know, it puts an ease on you as a parent for the same reasons, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know. Hey, stability, you know, like I said, stability is very important. I have six children.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I had to change. I had to change and become a real daddy, you know. And that was a transformation. But kids will make you do that if you really love them. And the sacrifice your mother made and invested in you is paying dividends. And
no way I can pay her back.
No, you're paying her back by being a good person.
That's right.
That's all she wants you to do is be able not to be laying on her couch. You know, drinking up the juice.
Hey, or fighting over washing the dishes.
But I love your natural.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
That's great. All right,
Rasha Key, I'm good.
All right, thank you guys.
All right, so I appreciate you, Miss Brianna Meeks, and Mom, Miss Benita Meeks.
Great, and, this has been wonderful.
Yes, and we're going to talk about you coming on as a featured guest, you know, pretty soon here. And we could tap your information, Miss Mosby Meeks. Yeah.
Oh, sure. When you start speaking of loans, I like to put out there whatever I can so people can find out.
I told you, she bought my house. I just paid for it. She knew exactly what to do and what to look for and what you couldn't do and what you had. I mean, it was like a blueprint. Like it. And then remember you told the lady, she basically told me what my mortgage payment was going to be before the underwriter did, down to the penny. I was like, okay, your mortgage is going to be this amount. And it was exactly that amount.
Right. And it was interesting because the mortgage lender, she said, oh, wow, you know, you would. She and the loan officer said, wow, you were so close to the exact, payment and DTI. But I know
I know how they're looking at it on the inside. And that's what a lot of people don't know, is how they're looking at it on the inside, how they look at it once they get it. What are they, you know, looking at it to, you know, a lot of people think, oh, they just don't want to do this or don't want to do that. Some things they can't do. Some things are due to guidelines. Some things like you can do FHA that you can't do conventional, and you can't, do, you know, it has to do with a lot of different things.
Yeah, and, when you get your episode, you're going to tell them all about it, Eugene.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Okay. All right, so I appreciate both of you, and I appreciate the panel. And next week, we got a brother, Dr. Mike is coming back on. I think it's his fourth appearance, and his topic is Back to the Future. Do we need to go ancient or modern as people? So that's very interesting. That's one of that's historian Joe Hembrick's buddy that's coming back on, and he's my buddy too. We all worked together for some years.
Okay.
And so that should be interesting. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody, good night.
Good night. Thank you, Mr. Moore. Good night.